extreme loss of ice that we had this summer was certainly a surprise.
The Arctic sea ice reaches its minimum extent for the year. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, September 19th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, Bristol Bay Native Corporation takes its pebble mine argument to Capitol Hill.
People need to look into the future and recognize that a food source of this magnitude is absolutely warrant for protection.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers home choice seminars that provide tools for making informed decisions about purchasing and financing a home and loans tailored for first-time home buyers. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Today, the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Colorado announced that the sea ice is starting to freeze up again in the Arctic Ocean. Unless some big winds come up, it looks as if the biggest meltback of the sea ice has happened on Sunday, September 16th. It was a record. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
The sea ice melt passed the old record set in 2007, weeks ago, and just kept melting back. By Sunday, there was only 1.32 million square miles of sea ice left. This is about 290,000 square miles less than the old record. That's about the size of the state of Texas. Very few predicted it would melt back this much.
The extreme loss of ice that we had this summer was certainly a surprise.
That's the Snow and Ice Data Center's director, Mark Serez. He says the computer models were predicting it, but not to happen this fast.
Even the latest generation of our climate models are too slow. In other words, we're on the fast track of change compared to these models, and what we saw here in 2012 was really just an exclamation point on that.
The computer models have been improving. Serez says they're still lacking good estimates of how thick the ice is, but they're doing better at it. And another problem is resolution. Just ask Shell. The center sea ice map shows the Chukchi Sea to be ice-free, and that's because its remote sensing does not have the resolution to pick up the ice that forced Shell to pull up anchors and move its drilling rig out of place more than a week ago.
And this was kind of a thin ribbon of ice that we couldn't really pick up well on the satellite data, but it just goes to show you, here we are with a record low in sea ice extent, but depending on where you look, you might have a different impression of this.
The unexpected rapidity of sea ice disappearance has generated all sorts of speculation about when the Arctic will be ice-free in the summer. One group is insisting that will happen just a few years from now. Serez won't go that far.
Looks like we're going to lose that summer sea ice cover. I think maybe by the year 2030 we could lose most of it. So we're on the fast track for sure.
The trend is undeniable. Not only did the ice never recover from its record withdrawal of 2007, but if you go back and compare this year's minimum to the average before the year 2000, you end up with a difference in ice extent that is double the size of the state of Alaska. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
Leaders from the Bristol Bay Native Corporation are in Washington, D.C., pushing members of Congress to support the forthcoming EPA watershed assessment and to increase protections for the salmon fishery in Bristol Bay. APRN's Peter Granitz reports.
The state of Alaska would approve or deny the Pebble Partnership's application for permits for the Pebble Gold and Copper Mine. Final applications have not been submitted yet, but the Environmental Protection Agency could use its power under the Clean Water Act to veto the plan outright. That's a scenario the Alaska delegation and the Bristol Bay Native Corporation both oppose. Jason Matrokin is the president of BBNC. Speaking at a noisy coffee shop on Capitol Hill, Matrokin said the company still supports the EPA assessment because it could protect the salmon by limiting some elements of the proposed mine.
It doesn't have to have overarching repercussions. It doesn't have to be an overreaching policy statement, but they can simply increase those protection for the fish and still allow the pebble mine developers to submit permit applications.
Matrokin did not elaborate on what a suitable mine would look like. He's touring Capitol Hill with Peter Andrew, a commercial fisherman from Dillingham. When he talks to lawmakers, he goes for the personal approach, emphasizing the importance the food plays locally.
I mean, if you look across America today, it had some droughts that had impacts on corn and wheat and so on, so the cost of food is going up. So people need to look into the future and recognize that a food source of this magnitude is absolutely warrant for protection.
Combine that with Matrokin's pitch. Bristol Bay Native Corporation operates in 49 states.
We may have an office in their district that employs 50 people, and these are 50 good paying jobs with good benefits and support for education, and BB&C is the type of company that really supports communities.
Translation, BB&C has something in your district far away from Western Alaska, which you need. That helps get a member of Congress on board with the corporation's Pebble agenda. Matrokin is hoping that members of Congress will support the watershed assessment the EPA will release soon. Many, including the state and Pebble Partnership, question the accuracy and authority of the assessment. The Pebble Partnership will release its own scientific review of the project. Mike Heatwall is a vice president with the group. He says Pebble will hold hearings in Anchorage October 2nd through 4th discussing the latest findings on fish, wildlife, and water quality. But he cautions the EPA assessment will not speed up the company's permit application.
We still need to put together a development plan that meets a lot of our own internal criteria, that lives up to the high standards we've set for ourselves and, frankly, that Alaskans have for this project.
Chief among them, how do you protect the health of the fishery? That's an issue the BB&C folks are bringing up in D.C. They say the EPA needs to have higher standards of protection now. If that were the case, Matrokin argues, Pebble could move forward with more clarity. And he says, instituting more rigorous protections now makes sense because it will just be harder later. In his eyes, the permitting is the end.
History will show you in Alaska that once they start the permitting process, it's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of when.
But neither side would hazard a guess just when that might be. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
A double shooting near Kiana is under investigation. Alaska authorities say two men were shot last night in an altercation at a cabin 40 miles upriver from the village. Alaska State Trooper spokesperson Megan Peters says the trouble began when the two hunters stopped at a remote cabin.
When the hunters stopped, they found another male was already staying in the cabin. Some type of altercation occurred, and ultimately the two hunters were shot. The unknown suspect then stole the victim's inflatable boat and also the hunting equipment, and they began floating down the river, too.
Peters says troopers responded to the scene at daylight this morning, taking the two injured men to a waiting medevac flight in Kiana, then transporting them to hospitals in Kotzebue and in Anchorage. She says no further information is being released on the victims. Peters could not say how troopers were alerted to the shootings.
Troopers are currently at the cabin where the incident occurred and also in the community of Kiana. More troopers and resources are being deployed in there so we can start a search of the large area and attempt to locate and arrest the suspect.
Peters says there is no current ID on the suspect. According to Village Public Safety Officer Richie Eunice, one of the men was shot in the chest and the other was shot in the arm. The village is in lockdown because of the incident. Peters would not release the names of the victims nor comment on their medical status. She says troopers do not know if the suspect is still on the river or not. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the new science behind slow earthquakes.
They're quite large. They're up to magnitude 7 or so. But because they happen over several weeks, they don't generate seismic waves.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Ladders are simple and effective tools in the workplace, but every year, thousands of employees are seriously injured or killed falling from ladders. Training to avoid improper ladder use can save lives. Employers for no-cost safety and health consultation and training services, call Alaska Occupational Safety and Health at 1-800-656-4972. This message is sponsored by Alaska Labor Standards and Safety.
Heavy rains in south central Alaska are inundating local rivers and creeks, causing flood concerns from Cordova to Anchorage. And a National Weather Service forecast for the Anchorage area indicates more wet weather to come this weekend. The National Weather Service issued a flood warning for Seward until 4 a.m. tomorrow morning. The Resurrection River was forecast to go above major flood stage by 4 p.m. this afternoon. City Manager Jim Hunt has declared a state of emergency, and that has triggered the activation of the city's Emergency Operations Center. Joanna Kinney is the Seward City Clerk.
At 1:15 this afternoon, our city manager did declare a state of emergency here in Seward and the Seward area due to heavy rainfalls and wind storms that we've been having have really created some flooding problems for us down here. Proactively, I believe he kind of declared this to help get people aware of the issue prior to it escalating to something worse.
The city is establishing a shelter at the Seward High School for residents who need to evacuate their homes. Kinney says power is out in part of the city due to trees falling on power lines. The city-owned utility is working to restore power, and Kinney says generators are at the ready if necessary. Kinney says local flooding is affecting some city roads, and flooding is reported at Mile 3 and 4 of the Seward Highway. Emergency services personnel in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough and in the Kenai Peninsula Borough are also keeping an eye on flood danger. The Matsu Borough Emergency Operations Center has been activated. EOC spokesperson Vicki Lee Fenster says wind gusts are taking a toll on power lines.
Here in the valley, in the Butte, they're getting hammered pretty good. Downtown Palmer, of course, is always windy. Wasilla is faring a little bit better. So it really kind of depends where in the valley you're at, what kind of winds you're getting. It seems to be the usual wind holes are very breezy today.
Matanuska Electric Association reported sporadic outages in Eagle River, Palmer, the Butte, and Eklutna. In all, about 3,700 customers were affected. Meanwhile, the National Weather Service's hydrometeorologist Dave Strickland says the heavy rain will continue.
That moisture is here already, and it is going to continue to be here for the next close to 48 hours, at least the majority of it. We're looking at it to continue to rain at least through Thursday evening. Might get a little bit of a break on Friday, and then back with some more moisture on Saturday.
Strong winds blew trees down in Anchorage as well, and especially fierce gusts this morning toppled and damaged a construction trailer at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. Several incoming flights were diverted to Fairbanks. More than 1,000 Chugach Electric customers lost power in the storm, but as of this afternoon, power had been restored to all but 100 homes. A collaborative effort involving government, environment, and business interests has kept a construction contract in cake. While it's a small job, those involved say it's a model that could be duplicated in other economically strapped villages. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Luther Kobe lives in Cake, a village of about 600 people on the northwest coast of Southeast's Kuprinoff Island. His business, CSC Tree Service, was recently awarded a contract for some small Forest Service projects about 15 miles from town. But he has to wait.
The moose season started. There's going to be a lot of people driving back and forth. So I'm just kind of waiting for the big bang start now. Everybody's all excited to hunt, and then give them a few days for them to calm down. And then there won't be so many people out there.
What's called the Little John Stewardship Project will replace or repair some deteriorating culverts and bridges. Kobe says he and two other residents will work on the project.
The money I make on this job, it all goes back into the community, like the gas, the wages, the equipment rentals, all that stuff goes back into the community. These small villages, they really need stuff like that.
The contract was originally larger and included tree thinning and other timber work. But the Forest Service scaled it back, making it easier for local businesses to compete. The logging component could become part of a separate contract. The changes came after meetings with local businesses, conservation groups, and others. Tom Parker is an agency resource planning supervisor.
The Petersburg Ranger District is working heavily on collaboration with local communities. And, it's an emphasis that I see coming from the forest itself, as well as from our district ranger, who brings over a lot of experience from the Thorn Bay Ranger District and a lot of collaboration efforts over there.
The Forest Service also purchased and shipped in supplies and materials because cake businesses could not afford to buy them up front. That practice also saved some money. The work will help improve salmon streams in the area. Old and damaged culverts can act as barriers for fish returning to spawn. The Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, a coalition of environmental groups, was among those collaborating on the project. Community organizer David Hafey says it was a success.
The Little John Stewardship Project intended to package work on Kupernoff Island in a way that actually benefited the ecological health of Kupernoff Island as well as the economic health of cake.
Kobe says he's been awarded two other small Forest Service contracts, and he'd like to see more on the table. He says one could turn trees that mills don't want into a marketable product.
There's a lot of timber out here in cake area. A lot of stuff not merchantable for lumber, but you can have a firewood processor right on site. You can be cutting up firewood and then bring it in on big trailers and then dump it and let it sit for a couple of years, a season under a roof, and then package it up and sell it and package firewood.
CX Hafey says the group is involved in similar efforts in the Wrangell and Hoonah areas. It's among conservation groups working with the Forest Service on its transition from large-scale logging to restoration.
All of those are multi-intention. They're all geared toward improving subsistence use, ecological health of watersheds, and putting locals to work rather than bringing folks in from outside and employing them for a few months and then sending them back home.
Many in the timber industry say the transition is bad for the region. Critics point out that a small contract's value, $26,000 in this case, is just a fraction of what one logger could make in a year. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
Earthquakes are a daily occurrence in Alaska, but most go unnoticed by the general public. The unfelt quakes include a slow variety, unknown to scientists until about 10 years ago. Stanford University professor of geophysics Gregory Berroza says ultra-sensitive seismometers and GPS measurements detect the gradual but powerful movements of the Earth's crust.
They're quite large. They're up to magnitude 7 or so. But because they happen over several weeks, they don't generate seismic waves.
Berroza, who spoke in Fairbanks this week, says slow earthquakes have been studied most closely in Japan, where a network of seismometers has documented them in an area where there are also fast quakes.
Observation is that these slow earthquakes are happening deeper than ordinary earthquakes. They're on the deep extension of the same faults that have the shallow, rapid, dangerous earthquakes.
Berroza says it's unclear if slow quakes precipitate more violent ones, but adds charting their subterranean location is useful. He says there's a line where slow slippage zones give way to areas prone to violent releases of energy.
They can give us that information about where the next big earthquake will stop rupturing, and we can use that pretty directly to predict just what cities will be shaken strongly and which ones not.
Berroza says measuring the depth of slow quakes is helping identify the line above which more violent fault movement happens. Berroza's Fairbanks visit was sponsored by the University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute and by the Seismological Society of America.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Federal Aviation Administration setting standards for the operation of aircraft in airports, faa.gov/go/flyalaska, or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. The law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
The Alaska Board of Game has rejected an emergency request for a buffer zone protecting wolves that leave Denali National Park and Preserve. Board Executive Director Christy Tibble says six members determined the request did not meet criteria for an emergency order. The petition sought a ban on trapping and hunting east of the park. The wildlife groups requested the emergency order after the Grant Creek wolf pack, viewed most frequently by Denali Park visitors, in April lost a breeding female to a trapper outside the park. The groups say the pack may have disbanded. Alaska Wildlife Alliance President Tina Brown says park visitors are being denied the chance to see wolves. She says the chances will continue to decrease unless the game board protects wolves outside park boundaries. Many times in a Southeast Alaska community, a pole raising means a carved totem pole unveiled to honor a family, place, or event. But last week, several dozen gathered in Haines to unveil a different kind of pole in awareness of domestic violence. From member station KHNS, Margaret Friedenauer reports.
The pole outside the downtown gallery is not carved or made of wood. It has metal rings of different designs created by several people using a variety of mediums. Some of the rings are painted. One has glass beads, and another has an entire poem sketched on it. Some of the artwork is only significant to the artist, but putting the issue of domestic violence on public display is what the effort is all about.
It's the community, and we're coming together and we're saying, yes, it does exist, and yes, as a community, we're going to address it. I think healing comes in admitting there's a problem, and this, as we've joined together and united, are admitting that there is a problem and we're doing something about it.
That's Jackie Majakis, the Domestic Violence Education Coordinator in Haines. She said the poll can also show those most affected by violence that there are resources and support for them in the community.
My hope is when people drive by and they see it, it will be a constant reminder, and that the victims will know they themselves are not alone, that we as the community are there for them.
Gallery owner Sue Folletti came up with the idea for the poll. It's a work in progress, and she expects other people will add to it. Some of the artists that contributed were at its unveiling last week. Lunch was served, and people huddled in the wind as the ceremony opened with dancing and prayer. A specially made drum was also unveiled and used in the dancing, as the audience was invited to join in the killer whale song. Emotions bubbled to the surface as the pole was unveiled. Former Haines Mayor Jan Hill said its prominent location in downtown will help expose the issue of domestic violence in the community.
Domestic violence has been the elephant in the room for a long time, and people don't want to talk about it. It's not a pleasant thing, but we want to make our community aware of how serious it is and how serious we take this issue.
Representatives from AWARE were also present. AWARE stands for Aiding Women in Abuse and Rape Emergencies. The Juno agency provides domestic violence outreach across Southeast Alaska. Leona Santiago works at AWARE but grew up in Haines. She spoke about how ancestors were present at the ceremony, supporting the community and those suffering from abuse.
Whenever we as Native people gather and we open with prayer and songs, we believe our ancestors come. They come and support us. And basically I was letting everybody there know that it wasn't just our Native ancestors, it was everybody's ancestors that was there, because it isn't just Native people.
The drum at the event was created as a healing tool, she said. On the face of the drum is painted the logo of the Haines Domestic Violence Task Force, Love Shouldn't Hurt. Santiago said the drum has special significance for people all over Southeast Alaska.
You know, it wasn't just significant of Haines and Klukwan, it's significant of all the other communities in Southeast, because that's kind of an echo over the mountains, the drum is, you know. And it's a healing drum, and also we think of the women that have died because of domestic violence or sexual assault.
In Haines, this is Margaret Friedenauer.
The communities of Haines and Skagway recently lost several residents in a short amount of time. Haines author Heather Lendy has this commentary about dealing with the passing of longtime residents and the sudden loss of friends and neighbors in such a small community.
When a Haines Facebook friend wrote, "No more dying, okay?" I knew exactly what she meant. Recently, we've lost a lot of people for such a small place. Two well-loved elders died basically of old age. Former Southeast Fair director Harriet Jurgelite and hardworking Hotel Halsingland founder Hilma White. Ed LaPerry was a grandfather, but his death following a car accident was a shock. The former sawmill owner traded in his red suspenders for what I thought of as a Rat Pack vibe when he bought the Captain's Choice Motel. Young Jeremy Haynes' death was also unexpected, but he had serious health issues due to multiple handicaps, although his mind worked just fine. Once, I saw Wayne Price, Jeremy's stepfather, lift him gently out of his wheelchair during a potlatch and hold him in his arms and dance with him, swaying and stepping to an ancient Tlingit song. Some of you may think I shouldn't mention Stymie Boggs' suicide, but I'm a mother, and Stymie had one too, and my bet is that she wouldn't want him left out because of the way he died. That eccentric Southern kid had a lot of friends in Haynes and Skagway. Now comes word that Ed's adult daughter, who was here for his funeral, has died suddenly, and American Legion stalwart Pat Murphy's cancer has gotten the best of him. A few years back, a friend who had been sitting by the deathbed of her neighbor said that she didn't think Haynes would survive that passing. The wave of grief, she said, would drown us. Then I listed a page full of people whose deaths had left their close friends and family bereft and had changed this town forever. That's life and death, and you can't have one without the other. It is odd that the only thing we know for sure is that we will die, yet each time it happens, even when the person is very old or terminally ill, death surprises us. I wish it wasn't so final, that dead friends and family members stayed around a day or two to tie up loose ends. I have been missing people I didn't get to properly say goodbye to for years. I read that when the Twin Towers were on fire and the hijacked jets were hurtling toward shore crashes, the last words cried into all those cell phones were virtually the same: I love you. In the beginning, love creates us, and in the end, love is all we know. The priest at my mother's funeral said death should shake us up. Each death, he said, should encourage us to better live the life we are lucky enough to still have. I know that's true. I just wish there were an easier way to learn it. Don't you?
Commentator Heather Lundy lives in Haynes. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org or follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Margaret Friedenauer in Haynes. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C., and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Doyon Limited, celebrating 40 years as Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. The Project Management Institute will present 3 one-day seminars at the Petroleum Club of Anchorage, October 9th, 10th, and 11th. Expert Neil Whitten will present No-Nonsense Advice for Successful Projects, Let's Talk, More No-Nonsense Advice for Project Success, and The Gift of Wisdom, Work-Life Balance for Today's Managers, Learn to Manage Projects, and more. Registration information at pmiak.org. This message sponsored by Project Management Institute, Alaska Chapter.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.